ethics bill and HB 318 and location of the special session. And we changed it on. We're going to hear HB 318 first. And we had somebody from the governor's office is en route as we speak. So maybe Riveting Roses and the governor's office speaking in the corridor someplace. So with that, I'd like to welcome Reverend Gatto and his assistant, Rick Van de Kolk, to the committee this morning. We would like to make bring us back to where we are. And I've got one person, I believe, in the audience. If you're here, sir, just hold up your hand. I have McKinley and McKinsley. Yes, sir. We'll get to you in just a minute here. Reverend Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. We should be dealing with the e-version, and I'm...
Chairman, you need to bring that up before us?
We're going to have to make a motion to adopt the e-version for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we take up for our working document for CS for House Bill 318, the e-version dated 2-22-08 by Cook.
Without objection, we'll read now. Okay, Reverend Gatto.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, the e-version incorporates what I call the 10-30 rule, and that is within 10 days or 30 days, depending on whether you're before or after the regular session, that Juneau be considered primarily as the best location. So it's outside of the 10-30 rule that I really wanted to talk to you about today.
So in other words, if the governor or whoever decides to call a special session, was it how much before?
For the record, Rick Van de Kolk, staff to Rep. Gatto. If the governor or legislature calls a session 30 days before the beginning of regular session, It could be anywhere, including Juneau. Up to 10 days after regular session, also, it could concatenate into a Juneau session.
I see.
So basically, if we're on our way to Juneau within 30 days, and it's now 29, 28, 27, we might as well hold it here. If the session has ended, and we're going to hold a special session, and it's within 10 days, we might as well hold it here. It's outside of the 30-10 rule that really I want to consider as a more appropriate to hold it in a different place. And let me give you some of the reasons why the bill is before us in the first place. And you've heard some of them, if not many of them. The primary one that I've heard from the residents who pretty much live in CBJ is that it's an economic issue. And the one of the earliest statements...
CBJ is in the city and borough of Juneau?
Yes, sir. City and borough of Juneau. They want to keep the session here. They want to keep the special sessions here. And they say it's this is where it belongs. And I've heard the one statement that, you know, it will devastate Juneau if we were to lose the Capitol. And, of course, this bill does not address the Capitol move. It is only, in fact, it doesn't address any move. It just doesn't say we need to build a hall somewhere. It doesn't say we need to hold regular sessions anywhere else. It simply refers to the special sessions. As innocuous a bill as is possible to manufacture under the circumstances is just the special sessions. And I personally feel, and I think I reflect the views of many of my colleagues, that holding the special session in a place other than Juneau is more than just helpful to the rest of us here. And let me make this as easy and as emotional as I can. We've had special sessions in Juneau following the regular session. This is a horrible place to hold a special session for the following reasons. About the time the session ends, we have given up our housing. We have arranged to have a vehicle and other things shipped. And when we get surprised with a special session, you have a choice. You can keep your vehicle here, but then there's no way to get it shipped out later. You can ship your personal belongings and do without, or keep a suitcase here. In other words, it is not just difficult, it's a monstrous inconvenience. And I want to address specifically the housing. Since I was here and you were here during the special session in the Murkowski times, and that is in these halls here, were legislators walking down the halls in bathrobes and slippers because they slept where? In the finest hotel in town? In a rooming house? In an apartment? No, sir. They slept in their office. I think that is a travesty to surprise people in a way that causes them to say, we need you down here for one of the most important single issues in the history of the state, but we don't have a place for you. We just don't. But that's not our problem. Now, does Juneau want to make a place for us? Absolutely. We have no quarrel about giving us space. But it's tourist season. The hotels have already booked space. And while I don't want to belabor the point, it's an important point that the place is not ripe for us to be when we would be better off somewhere else. And let me go ahead and make the other emotional issue. After being down here for 90 or 120 days, some people on your committee go home every night. They visit their spouse, they pet their dog, they visit their children, they go to church with their spouse on Sunday, they visit their neighbors, they have conversations, they watch their own big screen TV, they take shower in their own bathroom, go in their own closets when they dress in the morning. That's a dream. That's a dream. I wish I could have that dream. And it's possible. It's very possible. Because two-thirds of the population resides within driving distance of the largest two cities in the state. That's something I think after 120 days or 90 days under circumstances in this vicinity, which blesses us with credible and proper ability for us to spend our time here, I think it's absolutely crucial that we spend the rest of our time in a place that is a little more conducive where we can enjoy the benefits of a family life. We don't get to enjoy a family life down here. I do it by phone. And let me give you the hot example. I went home on one weekend a couple of weekends ago. And during that weekend, we had catastrophes in my house. And that is, we had no water. And at this time of year, that is a catastrophe. So 2 days later and 2 days of work, the submersible pump is now in the garbage and a brand new one is now installed there and the water is running. And to leave my wife and my kids without water is something that would just, I'd be terrified if I were here and saying, honey, you just got to handle it. Well, that wasn't even all of it. My kid is a senior in school and they had senior night. Would I want to miss senior night? My kid plays basketball for 4 years. Would I want to miss that? No, sir, I wouldn't. And what happened that night? Let me tell you. Did my kid score a lot of points, become the hero of the game? Nope. What happened during that game is he got an elbow right in his nose, knocked him flat on his butt, and I heard his head hit the floor. The doc said, take him to the hospital, keep him overnight, he's got a concussion. I'm going to ask you, is Juneau the best place to be to get a phone call and hear that? And that was on one weekend. So we give up plenty already to be in Juneau. We give up plenty. For 90 or 120 days, we give up that family life. And I don't want to give up one extra day. Those people who have easy access and go ahead and make that decision that they can give up 120 days of their family life if they want to, but they don't want to, as near as I can tell. I don't know anybody that thinks. Now, maybe I should bring my wife down here and my kid. Maybe I should do that so that I keep my family life going and the two dogs. And maybe I should bring my neighbors, my church, my pastor, my friends. Who knows? But my wife's not really conducive. She has a job. She's had the same job 14 years. She's a school nurse. My kid's been in the same school system for his entire life. And to move them back and forth, to me, is not something they want to do and not something I want them to do. But I'll give you the 90 or 120 days we're here. We'll put up with that. But I don't want to give you, and neither do many people want to give you, the next 10 days, the next 20 days, the next 30 days, the next 60 days, depending on how many of these things we want to stack up. I don't have a bigger issue than that one. And that is, my wife would like me home for as much time as I can muster. And I'm not ready to say, honey, the job is more important than you. So, basically, I'd like to be able to spend my time in a place. Now, is it just me? How about the people that go to Nome? How about the people that live in Fairbanks? How about the people that live, let's just pick distant places? Those people have easier access to home when they're right there in the biggest town in the state. You can, if you want to, spend 5 hours and be in Fairbanks, maybe six, but it's summertime. It's usually the best time of year. Getting in your car and going anywhere you want is pretty easy to do during those times of the year. Catching a flight is pretty easy to do during those times of the year. The access that people have by being located in the biggest city in the state gives us an opportunity, gives everyone an opportunity either to drive, which is two-thirds of us, of this population. And then I'm going to make just one more point, just one more, and that is the public. They get to watch us on that camera and say, oh, if they're watching. I don't know how many of them get that opportunity, but I know when I'm home, I can wear out my sleeves. Wherever I go, people pull me by the sleeve and have a comment to make. It's not for my benefit. It's for theirs. They like the idea that I'm home. They usually say, and I bet you've all had the same thing, so when are you going back? Or when are you coming home for good? Or any of those things. That's what they say. It's their capital, their legislature, their government. It's not ours. And yet we are isolated from the people who own us, who put us here. That's who we're isolating ourselves from. Do we want to do that? Do we think that's a good idea? I don't know anybody that thinks it's good to stay away from the very people you represent. Because that's what happens in some governments, especially if you're in Washington. People complain constantly about those guys. And that's what they call us in Juneau. Those guys. With respect, those guys and gals. That's how they refer to us. They have opinions of us that are not awful good. Unless you have a very good relationship with your constituency. Then they change their opinion. But by and large, there was a member of my community that I was walking up the street, and I said, Mark, what are you doing here? Some hockey. Well, I thought he had some kids from the high school here, and he was the hockey coach. And he said, no, I'm here to play hockey. So they have a men's team, and they travel, and they come to Juneau. And I said, we ought to go out, do something. He says, well, we're leaving tomorrow afternoon. Noon. And I said, well, you're leaving tomorrow afternoon if the planes fly. That's what I told him, if the planes fly. This is the singular place in this whole state where you ask that question, where we have a channel devoted to a view of the airport. Is this not the most amazing thing you've ever heard? A channel devoted to a picture of the airport so we can figure out whether or not people can get here or people can leave here. And yet, we're here for 120 days anyway. Do we want to extend that to 130, 140, 150? And then here's the last thing he said. And I'll end with this one, because it was so telling. It's when he said, you know what people think of you guys? That all of you are corrupt. I said, no way. He said, yep, all of you are corrupt. He says, that's why you like Juneau. And he says, what I tell them is that's not true. I tell them it's not true. And I probably convinced some of them. So do we want to have a reputation like that we didn't earn? Do we want to visit with our families? Do our families deserve a little more of our time? Do we have an economic reason that says we have to be in Juneau? Because Juneau will be devastated if we lose the special session. Do we want to live in our offices, sleep on an air mattress, try to find the bathroom? Do we want to do that? Or do we want to actually be where our constituents can grab our sleeve and, I hope, say thanks for what you're doing instead of we're all corrupt? Happy to take questions.
I had one question. You made a comment about people doing special sessions, and I've had the same problem. Most of us who don't live here have had the same difficulty trying to find a place to live, and so on. I've been fortunate so far. One time, in one special session last year, I went back to Anchorage and drove my travel trailer back down here so I'd have a place to stay. It worked out good. So I had to drag that travel trailer down here and then drag it all the way back at expense, more than I'd have just to drive down it without having to pull the heavy trailer. But we usually, and I would venture all of us, when we have a special session, it's because it's one of those big issues. Maybe the oil tax issue, probably coming up, perhaps the gas line issue and so on. These are big issues that we normally have during a special session. I would hope so. We wouldn't call a special session for one of the lesser issues. And have you heard of anybody saying, golly, we want to vote on the thing because I want to go home rather than devoting the time, where they're more concerned about getting home than taking the time necessary to make an informed and good decision on how they're going to vote on the issue for which the special session was called? Do you think that's a factor down here on making decisions? We want to go home, so we better vote?
I've heard things, and not maybe that extreme, but yeah, let's just vote on the damn thing and get out of here.
Yeah.
Isn't that a sad statement? Let's just get out of here on time. That's sad.
I recommend that's not the reason to vote yes or no on some bill. Isn't that correct?
Right.
Any questions for
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Johansson first, and then Representative Dahl. And I'd like to recognize Representative Rogers for being here.
It's good to be recognized. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
She slipped a note on who you were.
Representative Gatto, is there a definition of interconnected state road system? Is that defined in the statute somewhere?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, in the version E, that language is actually yanked out and redefined as anything on the rail belt connecting Fairbanks and Anchorage. And just look in Section 3 of Version E. There's nothing.
I have a copy here. Here you go.
Sometimes, Mr. Chair, you know what you want. It's just so hard to get it in writing. And I think this is a much improved version than the previous.
And while he's looking this up, what are the major differences between the E version and the previous version we had?
I think that's it.
It's the redefinition, redefining of what we mean by location on the rail belt. And then Rep. Gatto refers to that 1030 rule as he's referenced.
May I just inquire on that point, Mr. Chair?
Everything's in Section 3.
Yes, Representative, while he's looking this up, Representative Grunberg, I still want to get Representative Dahl down there.
The only change is the addition of subsection 3.
Not the addition, just to the chair, Rep. Grunberg, just section 3 is what was amended.
Nothing else in the bill.
Correct.
Thank you.
Senator Johansson.
I guess my question would be, what's the difference if it's in Fairbanks or if it's in Juneau, whether you get to go home at night? How long does it take to fly to Anchorage, or from Anchorage to Fairbanks? How long does it take to fly to Anchorage to Juneau?
because I actually know the answer, but actually we have a gentleman here who lives in Fairbanks and probably has.
I mean, just roughly. I mean, are we talking 5 hours to Fairbanks or 2 hours to Juneau? I don't fly.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson. 40-minute flight, 45-minute flight from Anchorage to Fairbanks.
and you guys fly it every day or every weekend to Anchorage, what's the flight from Anchorage, an hour and a half?
22 minutes.
An hour and 22 minutes.
It's the layover in Anchorage in trying to get to Fairbanks. I think when I talked to Representative Ramirez, I said, hey, I'll be home at a certain time. He said, well, I'll be home at 1 in the morning. And it was the time spent at the Anchorage Airport making the connection.
And I believe President Cargill would have the same situation living in the North Pole. Yeah. Representative Dahl?
Different points. On the interconnected road system, that leaves out about, that's really loud, isn't it? Back up. Is that too loud? It leaves out about 90% of the state who's not on a road system. So that in itself is not real conducive to representation, and it gives them no chance whatsoever in the future to be the site of the special session. I don't think that's a fair thing, just looking at that by itself. When you look at, and I think this is something with Representative Johansson was saying, when you look at all the capitals in this nation that are not in the most populated places, that means that all these people have to go back and forth to that. And it's kind of what you sign up for when you decide to be a legislator. I know that sounds kind of hard-nosed and crass, and I'm not emotionally sympathetic, but in fact, I'm extremely sympathetic because I happen to marry someone who chose the military and went on 9-month deployments and moved the family around 14, 15 different times, which left me having a baby on my own, raising kids, doing all those things, fixing pipes, fixing water, fixing heat, fixing all of those things. But it came with the territory because that's what he chose to do as a job. And I understood that. Didn't like it, but I understood it. So it's hard to argue with emotions. I know they're very, very, they're predominant. It's very hard. But I can only say on this that many people have signed up for this kind of thing, and it's part of what they do. Also, emotions overtake costs. How important is it? How important is it that we get up and pack up everything and go? Just for one day out of here, we know the minimum is $75,000. That's the $50,000 startup, the $25,000 per day. Not to mention days and weeks and weeks and weeks of preparing to have this done. So if you look at that it's somewhere between, say, $75,000 and $100,000 a day, and you say that's not important because my emotions are more important, and that's okay. Is it worth it? I think that's a question. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. How important is that? And what are you willing to pay for that? I'm dismayed that there's this perception that everybody is corrupt. I think there's a general perception that everyone is corrupt in Washington, D.C. as well. I think that just comes with the territory. And, of course, we do everything we can to dispel that. But it has nothing to do with, I think, one state over another state, one city over another state. It's public perception of what we do, and of course that's what we're trying to do here in this committee, is to show that we are accountable, we are responsible, and that we pay attention to ethics. So we're doing everything here to restore the public faith. But I would venture to say that has nothing to do with Juneau. So thank you.
And I would have to agree in some part with you on this thing because most people know I am a retired military. And I've spent a year in Vietnam. I spent a year in Kotzebue when it was a remote site. My first time in Alaska, by the way. Never in my wildest imagination did I think I'd be back here. Plus, I've been on extended TDYs in various exciting and exotic locations all over the world. Reverend Conkle, I believe, was in Germany. So we have suffered some of those things, and it did, in fact, come with the territory. But again, on this bill, we're not talking about the regular session, we're talking about the special session. And although when we volunteered our service to the state and we campaigned very hard to get elected, and we, in fact, were elected, we knew it was for the regular session, but also for any special sessions which somebody in their wisdom or lack thereof decided to call. But again, this is not for the legislature regular session. It is for the special. It almost seems like a special case to me. Any other comment or questions? And I want to open public testimony for the one person in the audience who would like to testify as a courtesy, since he came here this morning, and then we'll close it again. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Not at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to open public testimony for, is that Al McKenzie? Help us out, please.
McKenna?
Looks like. Oh, I see. My chief of staff said she's wrong about something. I want that on the record over there.
Good morning. My foreign name is Alfred McKinley Sr.
Yes, sir. And whom do you have?
You mentioned Army. I was an Army veteran myself in the 2nd Division, 23rd Regiment Combat Team in Korea.
Thank you for your service.
Right. Well, I'm here to testify on House Bill 318, location of special session. And I've been watching you guys on television, which is available to the public. We're not isolated, as aforementioned by previous people that testified before you. And first of all, I'm representing Grand Camp, Alaska Native Brotherhood, and I'm an executive committee member of the organization. I'm also a delegate to Central Council Chicken Haida, and I serve on the Judiciary Committee, where we're trying to activate our own tribal judges for our children. I have asthma, so after being a sergeant, I know it's hard for me to.
It's all right, sir. Take it.
Right. So I do my best. So. Yeah, as I mentioned, we have television available for the public to watch. I watch you every morning, and watch you all day. Sometimes I fall asleep watching everything that's going on.
Sometimes I think some of us nearly fall asleep too, but that's another story.
Yeah, I'm 75 years old now, you know, so it's kind of hard to keep up with the what's going on in the legislation.
Excuse me, don't say that, sir. I just turned 75 on the 23rd. I try to keep up too, and I think you and I would do a pretty good job of it.
Right. I'm actually originally from Huda, but I left Huda in the 50s, and I never got back home ever since after I got out of the military. Well, after I retired also from the government after 35 years, I'm a retired government accountant, auditing. I did stuff like auditing and stuff like that for federal government. And after I retired from the federal government, my people put me to work. So I'm here to testify for the people, public, I guess you might say public, because I'm here in the public interest. First of all, I'd like to explain what, when you come to Juneau, you're all on per dime. And according to the rules and regulations and Internal Revenue Code, per dime, if you go back home, you have to discontinue your per dime. And that's, otherwise, your big brother Bush is going to get you. So that's how that works in the federal government. And first, that another thing too, we have all this space available for the legislatures, and you have your where public can come over here and testify. If not, they could also use Fairbanks or Anchorage or Cosby or Bethel, Sitka, Ketchikan, can actually come and testify utilizing the teleconference. It would be no cost to the public. And they don't have to spend any money to come to the facilities available. And you have your staff also that's working for you. If you actually move someplace else, well, then they'll be also on per diem or whatever to it increases the cost. And also, you'll have to, the legislatures will have to obligate somebody for rent for 30 days where you have your session. And that's another money that you'll have to utilize as far as having your special session someplace else. So that's something about consider that whenever when you start reconstruction, the cost that you are going to endeavor for our people, public, and you got to utilize the best method to do all these things for the state of Alaska, and that's I want to bring that to your attention as far as reconstruction cost, where you can have your money. I know you can do all that. You have staff that can do that. I could do that to you maybe for $10, you know. I just outlined my deal here, and I didn't have time to get in my computer and start typing, but when I heard this was coming up, I decided to come over here and testify before you.
Thank you.
Another thing, too, when they had the special session in Anchorage, when you were actually, the subject was oil. And the only information we could get from that session was that the staff writers can give this information in a newspaper, but sometimes you have bias when a staff writer's writing. He'll write the way he wants to. Get the public, you know that, you know. So actually, but it's a lot easier for us to have our own judgment as far as how the session is going, which way they're going. In other words, 25% or whatever you're going to utilize, or 22.5%, 22.5%. But as far as, in my opinion, when it comes to finance, 25 was adequate where you made that decision. And I take my hat off to your people as far as the law that was passed on the public for the best interest for Alaskans. That's about all that I have that I can bring up in my outline. But I think you might say that I'm not too opposed to have the special someplace else unless you come up with a constructive cost where you're going to have the special session. It's my money, it's the public money that we're talking about. And I know our people, like our people in the villages, rural communities, actually need some money for education, and also we need police. Some people in our community need police officers and stuff like that. You know that I get calls. Sometimes I sit in my office. I don't get paid for what I do, but I actually. It calls about all these things that goes on all over Alaska. And also about another thing, too, about a scholarship committee trying to help our students complete college. We even have students going to Australia. And that's where we help them do the best we can to help the students get to be lawyers or liars, whatever you want to do, you know. So I work with Canadian.
I'm not going to go there on that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Really, if you have any questions, well.
Any questions? I thank you again. Again, thank you. Thank you for your service.
Well, and thank you very much for listening to me, and good luck.
That's what we do. I'm in favor of public testimony.
Right.
Is anybody else in the audience? Anybody else online? If not, I'm going to close the public testimony. Any other questions for the sponsor of the bill? If not, any discussion in the committee? Okay. I'll entertain a motion to remove the bill. If someone would like to make that motion.
I won't have an object on that.
Okay. A motion was made to move the bill. There's been an objection.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the motion.
Would you repeat the motion? There's a motion to move the bill.
There was no motion.
Oh, there was no motion.
Johnson voted.
Well, did you make a motion? Somebody objected?
I'm about to make the motion, if I could, sir.
Okay. You make the motion, then we got a little bit backwards here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move CS for House Bill 318, which is identified as 25LS1303E/Cook. There are no amendments and attached physical notes with individual recommendations.
I suspect there may be any objections.
Yes, I object.
Okay. There is an objection. Will you please take the roll?
Representative Johansson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg?
No.
Representative Dahl?
No.
Representative Roses?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
No.
Chair Lynn?
Yes.
3 yea, 4 nay.
Okay. Bill did not move from committee. It's possible we could bring it up again, but depending on the schedule, we may or may not. I thank you very much for your bringing the bill before us. Okay. With that, we're going to go to HB 368, which is Ethics and Government. Would my staffer come forward, please?
Right. Right. Thank you. But they can do the rest.
That's my problem.
There's some redeemer here. Help us out.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Carl did. Told me yesterday.
Okay. You'll now be hearing HB 368. Would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Mike Sika, and I am staff of Representative Bob Lynn. And HB 368, as Representative Lynn has said before, is just make some common sense changes in ethics and campaign laws, which were recommended to us by the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, as well as the Alaska Public Offices Commission. And I could just go through the bill real quickly for you, if you'd like, by section. Okay. Section 1 just merely takes the current language in 1513072G that is a prohibition on a candidate for lieutenant governor or governor on where they can incur election-related expenses, and just expands it from the capital city to the municipality in which the legislative session is convened. Section 2 is similar in that it takes the language from 2460031A, which affects a legislator or legislative employee running for the state legislature, and it just takes the prohibition on campaign fundraising, expands it from the capital city just to the location of where the session is convened when either house of the legislature is in session. Section 3 is the section on gifts. And what that does is it allows a legislator, a legislative employee, to accept a gift worth more than $250 or more in value from anyone in a calendar year, or accept a gift of any monetary value from a lobbyist, family member of a lobbyist, or a person acting on behalf of a lobbyist, if two things: the gift is unconnected with the recipient's legislative status, and the gift is from a member of the legislator's or a legislative employee's immediate family. Section 4 and 5 just simply restructure language for the Legislative Ethics Act as it relates to legislative volunteers and trainees. It just moves it into a different section. Section 6 just allows the publishing of official summaries of decisions and advisory opinions by the Select Committee on an annual basis versus a semi-annual basis. Section 7 just establishes another fine under 2460-260C. There will now be a fine for willful late filing to $100 for each day to a maximum of $2,500. The fine remains the same at $2 for each day to a maximum of $100 for a late filing, and it also keeps in place filing for an inadvertent late disclosure at a maximum of $25. And Section 8 just adds a definition to AS 2460-990 to define partisan political activity.
Do you have some more?
That's basically it.
Any questions?
I do.
Reverend Grunberg?
Yes, I apologize. These are kind of standalone provisions, and some of them are fairly complex. And so pardon my ignorance before I start. Page 3, line 21.
Page 3, line 21.
Is immediate family defined anywhere?
Yeah, it's in your packet. It's the definition that is in 2460-990. And what that says is immediate. It would be at the bottom of the first page where I had relevant statutes for HB 368.
I'm sorry. What are you referring to, sir?
It's just behind your fiscal note.
Behind the fiscal notes.
Right. There's the definition there. Okay.
Relevant statutes. Here.
And at the very bottom it begins. Oh, through the chair. Sorry.
Oh, I see. I see. That's already defined. Okay, that's my first question. May I continue?
Okay. Second question.
Next, we have sections 4 and 5, which simply seems to set up the language concerning legislative volunteers and educational trainees in a separate subsection. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Sika, why you're doing that. What is the benefit to do? I'm not saying it's wrong or anything. I'm just curious why you're doing it.
Through the chair, if I could defer to Joyce Anderson for this. She had requested this for clarity's sake, I believe.
Could we ask Ms.
Anderson? Ms. Anderson?
And if you'd stay there, because my next question is to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Joyce Anderson, Administrator for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. Representative Grunberg, through the chair, what we did was we're suggesting we divide those two sections up because the part that we're dividing actually refers to what sections of the ethics code that volunteers and trainees are covered under. And so we felt it would be better to divide those two sections up and make that clear.
Through the chair. So there's no substantive change. It's simply for style and convenience?
That's correct.
Okay. And finally, Mr. Chair, I would like Mr. Sika to please go over Section 7 once again slowly so even people who are legislatively impaired like myself can understand it.
Sure. Through the chair, I'll briefly respond, and Joyce Anderson,
whoever
would like to respond.
Sure.
Well, I'll let Joyce Anderson.
Either one.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. Basically, the Ethics Committee met, and Representative Roses is also a member of the Ethics Committee, so he can certainly provide further insight if it's needed. The Ethics Committee had a issue that had come up during the interim last year. Basically, what happened was is that legislators are now required to file ethics disclosures after they leave office within 90 days. And we had a former legislator who did not file his ethics disclosures, refused to file his ethics disclosures after two certified letters were sent out. Actually, I had a conversation with this legislator who hung up on me. And so the Ethics Committee felt that ethics disclosures are very much important. They are a requirement of legislators and staff. And so they looked at the fact that the fine structure right now, which has been in place for many, many, many years, is $2 a day for a maximum of $100. Well, this former legislator had two disclosures that were not filed, which meant that the fine would have been $200. The AG's office does not follow up on any money owed to the government that's under $500. And so the Ethics Committee did refer the matter to the AG's office because that was their duty to do so. But they also wanted to look at the fine structure. So I did some comparisons with some other states. And after discussion, I think there were two committee meetings in which the committee discussed this. They felt that there needed to be an added section to the fine structure, which called for willful failure to file, and that the fine needed to be hefty versus the $2 a day with the maximum of 100.
May I respond on that point?
Reverend Gruenberg.
Thank you. The word shall on line 13, of course, we're all on page 5. I'm an options person myself, and I believe that judges and quasi-judicial bodies should have the authority but not be required to impose certain penalties, because I've learned in over 30 years of practice that for every factual circumstance, there may be another factual circumstance where for some reason the judicial body would not wish to impose that. And I'm kind of looking at you and also Representative Roses. I would recommend that the word shall be may, and that way the quasi-judicial body, the committee, the joint committee, the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, would have the authority to do what they felt was just under the circumstance and not feel bound. And I'm wondering if either of you, through the chair, would
what,
care to respond.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I believe that the committee would be agreeable to changing the shall to may. Basically, right now, it is at the discretion of the committee if the fine is inadvertent, and then the committee fines $25. So, and if Representative Roses agrees with me, I don't think that would be a change that the committee would be in disagreement with.
Because the inadvertence is a may on line 11. This would simply track that. And if I may, finally, Mr. Chair, without...
Well, let's don't get beyond this one point.
Oh, okay, do you want a motion at that point, an amendment?
I think so. Representative Roses?
I would like to respond.
Sorry.
I like the may better than the shall, because simply in the situation that you just referred to, where the individual had been contacted, had they ponied up to begin with, I think the fine should be less than those that you have to pursue several times. So I think the may being in there gives you the latitude to gradually enforce the regulation and drop the hammer if you have to.
Mr. Chair,
if there's no further discussion, at all, entertain a motion for an amendment.
If I may?
Yes, you may.
I shall, if you give me the option to do it.
You may, if you wish.
Thank you. Then I shall do it. Okay, amendment number one, I guess we should call it, on page 5, line 13, delete shall and insert may. Ask unanimous consent.
I'll object just for one discussion.
Okay.
To the maker of the amendment, should it be maybe 100 or maybe up to 100?
If you say maybe, that means maybe up to.
Okay. All right. Then I'll remove my objections.
Any other objections? If not, amendment one passes the committee.
And that's conceptual, because if the drafter feels that other language is appropriate, then I'll leave it up to them.
Thank you.
And may I continue?
You may continue. I know you shall.
Thank you. The definition of, in Section 8, partisan political activity, is where was that taken from, or how did we get to that specific language? Through the chair.
Through the chair, there was a similar definition in AS 3950, referring to partisan political activity affecting public officials, and we adapted it to be more specific slightly to this issue, and that's basically it.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Gordon? Okay. Reverend Cargo.
I'm just not there with comfort level on this language yet. I don't know what to do about it yet, but it may be my vote against the whole bill. And this Section 8 is something I'm going to have to ponder a little bit.
Shall we explore Section 8 a little further?
But while we have Ms. Anderson here, I'd like to ask a question on Section 6, because I got to ponder that Section 8.
Okay. Then you want to come back to 8 after we talk about
it? I think it's a simple answer, so
okay.
I just want to get it out of the way.
Nothing is simple here. Section 6.
Section 6 is just the publishing of either an annual or semi-annual report. That's conforming language, if I remember correctly. Am I right?
Representative Coghill, through the chair. Basically, since I've been on board since 2001, we have published annual publications. And it's an official publication that goes out. You should have received it in your office at the beginning of the year. And what we've done since the statute was into play, we now have a website. Both summaries of decisions regarding complaints and advisory opinions are available on the website. They're available. The advisory opinions are available through a searchable database. And then I also put them in the newsletter that comes out. So basically, this just becomes a publication. The publication then goes to the House and the Senate, and it's read into the journal.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, it seems to me like we went through this last year on the annual report. So I guess I'm surprised. So refresh my memory. Did we not talk about reporting annually from your office last year?
I don't remember that being in part of HB 109 last year. You and I may have had that discussion, Representative Coghill, but I don't remember it being part of the bill.
All right. Thank you. It should be a pretty simple fix, though.
All right.
I yield.
You want to try to make a fix on it? You said it.
No. I'm fine with
okay,
that.
Okay, great.
I'm fine with
and that. How about Section 8?
Can I ask Mr. Seeker?
Well, let me get a response. Let me ask, what about Section 8, Reverend Coghill? You'd want to revisit that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think the differentially benefit or harm is language that is new to me, and whenever I see that kind of new language, I just need to ponder it, and I haven't up until this very moment recognized the fact that we have what an intention is for a political party activity. Usually what we do is we say this action is good and this action is not good, but now we're going to put in activity and intention, and then we are going to try to describe what's different between a benefit and a harm. And it just seems too much for me. So I don't know. I guess at the very first thing, what I do is I would make the motion to delete lines 17 and 18 out of Section 8, page 5, just for discussion.
Okay.
I'm going to object just for...
Object to that, okay.
Just technically, if you're going to delete that, then you have to delete 17 through 21
right.
Because it's the whole thing. I assume that's what you meant.
Yes. Well, I wanted to stop and have a discussion on this because I think this section is not something that I pondered up until this very moment. I'm sorry for doing it on the fly.
That's what we do here in the committee. Well, then let's just stop at this point and handle 17.
Okay. Maybe the way that we got to this particular language would be helpful. Maybe Mr. Seeker can help us.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Seeker, you quoted another statute in Title 15. Where was that?
I'm looking for it right now. I apologize.
Okay. Because I looked in the general definitional section, which is 1560.010, and I do not see, quote, partisan political activity in there.
Mr. Chairman.
Johansson.
Well, these two are finding the statute. We have three military people on the committee. I'm wondering what a Section 8 is in the military vernacular. Maybe that has something to do with the confusion. I'm a MASH fan, so...
Section 8 is not contemplated in this.
Article 15 is, but I don't know what a Section 8 is, so maybe that means I'm innocent.
Section 8 is when you're discharged for mental reasons, isn't it?
It's for mental
Section 8.
I remember.
Section 8 is.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we should, in fact, delete all of Section 8.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Every time I see a Section 8 in one of these bills, that comes to mind. I just can't help it.
I think we have an answer here.
Through the chair, it's in 3952-120A6.
Would you give me that again, please?
You got it.
3952-120, what's the rest?
Actually, B6.
B6.
And
could you read the definition?
I can read it if you'd like. It says,
yes,
misuse of public position. And under 6, it says, use or authorize the use of state funds, facilities, equipment, services, or another government asset or resource for partisan political purposes. This paragraph does not prohibit use of the governor's residence for meetings to discuss political strategy, does not prohibit use of the communications equipment in the governor's residence, so long as there is no special charge to the state for the use. And this paragraph, for partisan political purposes, A, capital A, means having the intent to differentially benefit or harm a lowercase I candidate or potential candidate for elective office, or two little I's, political party or group, B, and then uppercase B, but does not include having the intent to benefit the public interest at large through the normal performance of official duties. And we changed official duties to legislative action.
Do we wish to have that distributed? I can have my staff distribute that if you
would. Do we need that wish of the committee? Do we need that?
Just a couple of questions. First of all, Title 39 is administrative ethics, true, the executive branch. And 2460 is legislative ethics. Generally speaking, we have aligned many of those things, so I'll go along with that. It may be very different for somebody who is political in nature, like we are, to differentially benefit or harm than it would be for a executive branch member to differentially use their position within the executive branch, because they're not inherently political. Where we are, everything that we can be accused of has political ramifications. And so before I'm willing to put this definition in, I want to ponder that.
Reverend Gruenberg?
Yeah, I would like, just because I have a question, and I'm glad you caught this, if Ms. Anderson and or Mr. Sika or anybody else for that matter could tell us where in 24, Title 24.60, partisan political activity appears, because that's going to be essential for us to know what this is defining.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, it appears in 2460-030-A2. And what it says is that a legislator or legislative employee may not use public funds, facilities, equipment, services, or another government asset or resource for a non-legislative purpose for involvement in or support of or opposition to partisan political activity.
So, to the chair.
And if I may comment, Mr. Chair, the reason that this is in here is that there have been, prior to Representative Rose's being on the committee, a complaint that the Ethics Committee looked at. And we looked at it in relation to partisan political activity. And the discussion at the executive session committee meeting regarding partisan political activity included the fact that the press secretaries for both the House and the Senate, for the majority minority, are considered partisan because they work for the majority of the minority, and that also there, and it happened to do with the press release at that time. And so the committee debated two executive sessions regarding what is partisan political activity, what exactly does it mean. And so it has been an issue over the time, and also in regard to advisory opinions that are issued, because there is no definition in statute. And so it's really what's happening is that the Ethics Committee is taking the particular factual situation and looking at it in relation to the words partisan political activity without having a definition to follow regarding that. And so it has been a discussion, I would say, over, well, let's see, I came on board since 2001, since I've been on board. And so I think it's important in that aspect for the committee, the Ethics Committee itself, to have some guidance as to really what partisan political activity means. And so being that there was a definition in the executive branch ethics, We took a look at that and then decided to make the change about adding legislative action, which we do have a definition in the statute under 246990. So that's a little bit of background where it's coming from.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
That certainly answers my question. It seems that the underlying statute, which is 2460-30A2, thank you, is very similar to the executive ethics underlying language, Executive Ethics Act, 3952-120 sub B6. But there is one difference, and that is in the Executive Ethics Act, the definition is contained within the paragraph itself, so it only pertains to the one paragraph. Here, you wish to put it in the definitional section, which means it will pertain to the entire Legislative Ethics Act. And so that the placement of it may prove to be different, and that may be significant at some point. Ms. Anderson, through the chair, are you quite sure this phrase, partisan political activity, occurs nowhere else in the Ethics Act? Because if it does, we need to be sure, since you're putting it in the general section, otherwise we should maybe just put it in this section. I don't have a feeling. It's just simply a question through the chair.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, this is the only section that uses the words, the three words, partisan political activity. There is a section in 2460-134 which has to do with the prohibited conduct by public members and committee employees and contractors of the Ethics Committee, mm-hmm. and it uses the word partisan only. But it does, in reading that particular section, you would look at it. It also talks about political activity within the same section. So, but those are the only two places in the entire ethics code that uses, first of all, there's only one that uses partisan political activity, and the only other time partisan is used is in 2460-134.
The question then is, if we put that in the general definitional section, as you have it in the bill, would that also be used to define the term partisan or antonym nonpartisan in 2460-130A1? Do you wish that also, because I think a court or a trier interpreting this would be likely to look to the general definitional section in interpreting it in the other section as well. Is it your desire that that would be interpreted the same way through the chair?
Representative Grunberg, I would think so. I guess I'm going to leave it up to the committee to decide if they want to put the definition specifically in 2460-030, since that is where the word partisan political activity is.
If I may follow up with one
Go
question.
Ahead.
The answer to your question would depend, in my mind, on whether you wish the term partisan or nonpartisan in the other statute to be similarly interpreted, because if you did, then it should be in the general definitional section.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, yes, I think it should be in the general definition section.
And that satisfies me.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
And I know I have an amendment on the table, but it was meant to generate this very discussion. And I probably should have had the amendment to strike all of Section 8, because I think the conundrum that we find ourselves in a legislative body is, first of all, we're elected as a political activity, and everything that we do, both in policy action and in press, could be construed as political activity, as if that's bad. Political just by nature means policy making. And so then we're going to try to put a partisan political activity that can only have a benefit or a detriment. And I suppose that's in the eye of the beholder. And so then we're going to try to put that into the ethical issue where much of my contention about much of our ethics law has been, if it's always used nobly, it will work. But if it ever gets used with less than noble intent, then we have a problem. And so what we do is we put these things into definitions, and then we put people like Ms. Anderson in this really difficult position where a charge is made, and they have to go through these definitions saying, does it differentially benefit or harm? And yeah, I suppose, you know, and then they get buried down into the details. And so before I'm willing to put this kind of definition in, especially as a general rule, I really got to ponder this because, and I'm sorry I didn't catch this before we got to the committee.
Would you want to withdraw the amendment you have now and make a new amendment?
I will withdraw the amendment and at this point withdraw support for the bill until I get this figured out.
Okay.
So I withdraw the amendment.
Beg your pardon?
I withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Representative Gornberg.
Do we have other witnesses on this bill?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
I don't. Is anybody online for this bill?
No.
Anybody in the audience for this bill? I do have somebody. Well, we have Brooke Miles and Jan DeYoung are available for questions only. Anybody like to ask either of these ladies a question?
Mr. Chair, I see there are some amendments that have been laid on the table. Mm-hmm. When we discuss them, I imagine these people will want to testify.
Well, the amendment's not been laid on the table yet. How about yours?
And there's another one, too. Mm-hmm. Somebody else, and it doesn't have anybody's name on it.
Well, that's interesting.
At least I was given it when they gave out mine. Nancy, was there another amendment, too? Or was that just sort of given out? It was a sheet that was at the bottom of the pile. Here, it just has. Was this just an informational sheet? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So I guess the only amendments are mine.
I'd like to ask Representative Coghill on Section 8, for the purpose of moving the bill along, perhaps, would you want to just delete all of Section 8 so we can move the bill and let it address this in the next committee of referral?
I think, I would consider that because I think Ms. Anderson's right. We need to probably help her with language in the statutes since we've already described it. But I honestly, I cannot come up with what I would think.
Well, if you do that, that would give us time. Next committee, it would take it off the table here. And I believe this goes to Judiciary next, which both of us, well, three of us in this committee are also on Judiciary. So I'd entertain a motion to delete Section 8.
All right, with the understanding that the discussion comes back.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, you're free to make any amendment you want to in the next committee, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will make the motion then to delete Section 8, which is on page 5, line 15 through 23.
Okay, without objection, it is deleted. Okay. Okay, where are we now? Okay, Representative Dahl?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to offer an amendment, but I don't have it written up, so it'll be because...
It'd be conceptual.
Yeah.
Where is it, and what's the topic?
It is to, and I have just lost my place on this, but it is to reinstate the word capital city and delete municipality.
Could you give us a location?
Yes, I'm looking. Actually, I'm on another eye. Went too far in my notes.
Sections 1, 2, and 3, and 4.
Okay. It's on page 2.
Page 2.
Line 4, line 12, line 21, and line 27.
And you change it to locality?
And move it back to capital city. To replace it with, in other words, get rid of those suggestions there and replace it again with capital city.
Everybody understand the amendment? Is there any objection?
I object.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Speaker.
Yes, thank you. Yes, because I feel when I was looking at the intent of this bill, it was to House Bill 368 makes common sense changes to the state's ethic laws concerning gifts to and from legislators, legislative employees, and lobbyists who are immediate family members. I believe that is the intent of the bill, that it is not the intent of the bill to raise up another issue, which is a potential capital move issue or a legislative issue. And this came up in another bill. I'm trying to recall exact bill name, but Representative Myers did this, and it was amended in Judiciary that took out exactly this kind of language, because it, what it did is that it refocused, or it maybe the better word is, it diffused what the attention really was. And I believe that a bill should have one intent, not several intents, and this changes the intent of this bill. So I would like to offer this amendment and have it stay with the intent of the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
And so the amendment would be the part that was deleted previously?
Go back to the original language.
Go back to the original language. That way it wouldn't require conceptual, right?
That's right.
She'd strike sections one and sections one and two of the bill.
It would be yes. It would go back to the original. That's correct.
Yeah, that would be conceptual amendment number four. Okay. Any discussion? Who's Representative Johansson?
Thank you. I think it's no secret to the committee that I support keeping the Capitol in Juneau, but I think this bill, this language is really a practical issue, and that question is being discussed elsewhere. And I think this needs to be in there depending on the outcome of other legislation. I don't think the issue is in this bill, but if other things happen, I think this needs to be there. So I would respectfully oppose the amendment.
Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would oppose the amendment because, it, in fact, we do are capable of having special sessions outside the Capitol, and we have had one in Anchorage. We may have one other places. It is within the purview of the legislature to meet where we want, and I would hate to see us in a situation where if we did choose for some reason to have a 1 or 2 day session or whatever the case may be in Anchorage or any other place, like we did on senior care, that it would allow certain activities to happen just because it wasn't in Juneau. So I would hate to wrap ourselves around, I'd hate to go down that road when it is entirely possible we will have special sessions outside the Capital City.
Thank you. Representative Rosas.
Thank you. And I'm going to oppose the amendment as well for the very same reasons that the other two that have already spoken, but for another reason. And that's the fact that once you start opening ethics bills and start dealing with them, then you start getting all kinds of changes that are recommended that we be made. We went through a tremendous amount of discussion last year on new ethics legislation. If there is a way in which to word something so that it doesn't require you to go back and make changes to it a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, I certainly agree with that. So I think this language is generic enough that it doesn't say anything about by passing this, that means we're going to move the session. What it says to me is by passing this, it doesn't matter where the session is, the language covers the situation. So I'm going to oppose the amendment for that reason.
Reverend Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too generally oppose the capital move, and I have voted accordingly. But for the reasons of the previous three speakers, I'm going to oppose this amendment.
Okay. Is the objection maintained?
I will remove the objection.
Okay. Thank you. Objection has been removed.
She means
no, no, no. You have the amendment.
I'm sorry. I will withdraw the
amendment. Withdraw the amendment. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I believe that Reverend Grunberg had some amendments he may want to put in. He came to me last night, had some amendments from a bill that he had to pull out of there, put onto this, and I want to be careful not to quote Christmas tree this bill. So explain why this is not doing that, and then propose amendments, but I want to move rapidly on it.
Absolutely. Yes. I put together a bill on the last day for personal bills. Unfortunately, I wasn't here and couldn't do it much before that. And something I've been working on for a considerable period of time, and these I think should be fairly non-controversial. I do not want to Christmas tree this, but I do think that they're important changes in the law and clarifications. And this whole thing has moved so quickly that I really wasn't able to come to you before then, Mr. Chair. I do apologize. We're doing our best.
Because the first I heard about this, you know, was
yes,
it,
of course.
Last night.
Of course.
Okay. Would you speak to it, please?
Yes. And I'd like them considered separately. And I guess the first one would be number 5 and then number 6 and number 7, if you could just renumber them accordingly. I do not have any backup on number five. I'm going to move number five if somebody would object.
I'll object.
Thank you.
And I will probably maintain my objection.
Okay. This change is to a legislation we passed in the omnibus ethics legislation last session. And it changes one word in the bribery statute because it is, I think, at least as often the case that somebody is bribed not to alter their position but to maintain their same position. And the current language does not make it bribery unless you are paid to change your position. This would make it clear that it would also apply if the illegal contract were not to change your position but to maintain the same position.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And I guess this is a question for the maker. If I have a position and I'm given a contribution, how do I prove that I accepted that contribution to maintain my position? How would I defend that? I mean, it seems to me that that's an indefensible position. I'd have to change my position.
If I may respond to that.
Please.
By the way, for House records, this language has been given out, and I don't know if you, it would, do you want me to read the amendment? It's a, we have it in writing here.
Okay.
I think maybe you need a copy of the.
No, I have a copy.
Okay. It's section one of the bill.
Please press ahead.
Okay. The burden is not on the defendant. The burden's on the prosecution at all times to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. So the prosecution would have to prove that the reason you maintained the same position was because of the illegal agreement. It is not enough for them to say that you got a contribution or that you got a certain sum of money or something and maintained your position. They would have to show the causal connection. The burden's on the prosecution. And frankly, this is an issue that did come up in the recent trials because the defense was that the people would have voted that way anyway. But the prosecution managed to convince the jury in those three cases that the reason for the vote was, or at least the agreement was, that they would keep the current position because of the bribe. They have to show that causal connection.
Then, if I understand correctly, they were able to make their case even though this person maintained their vote.
But that was under federal law, not state law.
I see. Representative Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, to speak to my objection, first of all, this is a criminal issue dealing in a civil bill. And my objection to even discussing this last year was the same issue. However, it was put in the bill, and shame on us for doing it. But this is a criminal issue where you are then going to have to find, as he said, a criminal intent. It's going to be, generally speaking, a sting operation where they're going to have to catch you agreeing to something, whether you change your vote or not. And just for the fact that we're going into Title 11 on this particular bill, I object. And so I will vote against this amendment, regardless of what the merit is, because I don't think the Title 11 belongs in this discussion at all. However, when you start using the word effect, then you open up a whole new discussion on intent. And I would encourage members to vote this down. And if he wants to bring it up in judiciary, we can go through the whole intent language, what effect, effect, and alter all mean in criminal proceedings. But I would encourage the maker of the amendment to not press forward on this issue.
In the interest of time, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay, amendment's been withdrawn, thank you.
Okay, by the way.
Because we do, I would like to pass this bill out of committee without delay, and I think you make some good points in this, but this may not be the time to do it.
Right, and by the way, these are all conceptual. The bill, if they're adopted, the bill drafters will put them in the bill where they go. Okay, the second is Section 2 of the bill, which was Amendment Number 6, and this is backed up by the article from the Los Angeles Times. This is a problem, and it is covered under California law. Basically, what we're talking about is on your campaign spending report, it should not be enough to simply say, I sent $500 to MasterCard. You should have to itemize. It was $100 for stationery, $50 for food for a fundraiser, et cetera. This simply clarifies that these should be broken down, just as you would if you were paying cash or you were paying with a check. That's the only intent.
Okay. Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is a question, not for ethics, but maybe I'm not sure for whom, but I always itemize mine, and I'm not required to. I could just say a credit card. My expenditures aren't required to be itemized now. I think they are.
We have Brooke Miles on the phone.
Ms. Miles, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, this is Brooke Miles.
Welcome. Please identify yourself. Again, did you hear the question?
I did. Mr. Chairman, my name is Brooke Miles. I'm the Executive Director for the Public Offices Commission. Under current law and regulations, we do require that a debit or credit card transaction be itemized. It also should be noted that in the section of law, AS 1513040E, that is being recommended for clarification here, this section is what applies to independent expenditures and not to campaign expenditures. Only independent campaign expenditures. So, but current law does require that, if it's felt that this needs to be added, that's fine. But it should be put in all of the sections regarding expenditures for candidates and groups.
So basically, in your opinion, this is not necessary in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, another question of follow-up.
Well, let me, Ms. Miles.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so you don't feel it's really needed. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to disagree with Ms. Miles, but does this also mean that if someone were doing a expenditure for an initiative process or a third-party expenditure, either supporting or opposing a position or a candidate, that they could just say $5,000 was given, charged to a credit card, and not have to itemize?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand your question. What this 040E are independent expenditures. So an independent expenditure on behalf of a ballot proposition, yes.
So if I could, Mr. Chairman, so right now if someone were to say here's a $5,000 contribution to anything other than the candidate doing themselves, that it wouldn't have to be itemized as to what it was spent for right now under today's law?
No, it says.
Under today's law, everything must be itemized. If you spend $5,000 to Visa, you have to put on whichever report you're filing what you are paying Visa for.
Even the independent expenditures?
Yes.
So this amendment is totally not necessary. Superfluous. Okay, thank you, Mr. Thank you.
With that, I will withdraw this amendment.
Okay, amendment, what was the number of that?
Number 6.
Amendment number 6 has been withdrawn. Do you have one more and final one?
I have one more and final one. And this is what is currently Section 3 of the bill, and it is to make it clear that the circumstance, and I'll use VICO as an example, would be illegal where person A gives money to a candidate and then is reimbursed by somebody else, and it's sort of a pass-through in an attempt to evade the campaign spending limits.
And a question, is that not illegal today?
Well, I'd ask Ms. Miles that question.
I'll object just because we can ask Ms. Miles.
Ms. Miles?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. again, APSC sees this as not necessary. We have always considered that a repayment of a campaign contribution, we've always considered and the commission has always upheld, includes a reimbursement for a campaign contribution. It's currently illegal, and it's always been illegal.
Okay. I'm going to withdraw that as well. We drafted these fairly quickly with legal counsel, and I may pursue – I'm going to talk to Ms. Miles further. I may pursue the first one in judiciary, and I thank the committee's indulgence. I'm slightly embarrassed, but that goes with
the
truth.
You need not be embarrassed. It's what we do here. And you do have the HB 408, which speaks to the, your bill, which you've not heard yet, but we'll put it
on. I'm not going to ask for that bill to be heard.
Okay. But you're available to hear it if you ask.
Mr. Chair, I'll deal with it.
Representative Rogers.
On that particular topic, I appreciate the fact that Representative Grunberg withdrew these amendments, but bringing them forward certainly
absolutely
brought some information to me that I didn't have, so there should be no reason for embarrassment. This was good information, and I appreciate it.
But just for the record and for Mr. Representative Coghill, I will explore with him and the next committee the first one. That I'm not sure if I introduced a bill last year, but I had it drafted, just that one provision. I was concerned when we took that language. I didn't raise it last year, but for the reasons I've said on the record, that it should be illegal to pay somebody to keep their position the same.
And I believe I recall that. You do have HB 408, which is not, you've not asked for hearing on it yet, but you're welcome to do so at any time.
Oh, okay, that's what I'll do.
Okay, any other discussion on HB 368? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move the bill with individual recs.
Okay. Bill's been moved. Is there any objection?
A CS.
Oh, we adopted the CS, I believe.
No, we didn't. We took an amendment, though. Several amendments, actually.
Well, let's.
So it's be a CS.
Yes. Okay. Without objection.
Mr. Chairman. The motion should be to move the House Bill 368 with as amended with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Okay, and we'll make that as a motion.
Yeah.
And without objection, so moved. And thank you very much. It's been a good good hearing this morning, and I do appreciate it. Please stick around until we sign the paperwork here. We've not adjourned yet. We're getting ready to hear. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't. Do we have the schedule?
How strong?
You don't want to announce the next one's coming up. Where is it?
The reason is because it's hard.
Okay. Before we adjourn, we are scheduled to meet again on February 28th. We're going to be hearing HB 269, which requires Alaska U.S. flag to be made in the United States. Representative Grunberg has a good amendment for that, I believe.
But we're working. I hope we have it.
And HB 54 again, and then HB 353 involving internet filters for public libraries. So with that, thanks to the committee. Good hearing this morning.